This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and across America. I'm your host, Jay Shell. Our guest today is Derek Goldman. He's the National Field Director and the Northern Rockies Field Representative for the Endangered Species Coalition, which is based in Washington, D.C. Derek has worked with the Endangered Species Coalition since 2005. He's advocated and organized primarily around gray wolf and grizzly bear issues, in addition to other species in the region. Derek cut his teeth on wildlife conservation issues as a legislative intern with Montana Audubon and a field volunteer with the Buffalo Field Campaign. He has also been engaged in social justice issues, serving as a board member of a grassroots Latin American solidarity group, which mobilized against unfair trade policies and the U.S. intervention in Latin America. Prior to earning an M.A. in environmental studies from the University of Montana in 2004, Derek worked as a river guide in Wyoming. In Alaska, Utah, and Montana. He lives in Missoula, Montana now, where he enjoys exploring the backcountry by foot, boat, snowboard, and paraglider, and any other means he can find. So, welcome, Derek. It's good to be talking with you. How are things in Missoula?
Good, Jay. How are you? And thanks a lot for hosting me today.
Great. Okay. So you've been with the Endangered Species Coalition since 2005. Have you been in Missoula all that time?
I have been in Missoula all that time. I occasionally travel about the state a little bit, sometimes to Idaho. And, you know, I'll tell you a little bit about the Endangered Species Coalition. Is we're a national network of more than 400 organizations, including conservation, scientific, education, religious, sporting, outdoor rec, business and community organizations, as well as hundreds of thousands of individual activists and supporters, you know, all of whom are dedicated to protecting our nation's disappearing wildlife and the last remaining places. Here in Montana, we have about 2,300 members and supporters.
So your area of responsibility is what, the Northern Rockies?
It is primarily Idaho and Montana, and primarily Montana among those two states, mostly, you know, just by the fact that I live here.
All right, it's big state.
Montana.
Big state to cover, yeah.
Yep, and, you know, like Idaho and Montana, you know, as you know, the Northern Rockies, there's a lot of wildlife issues. You know, this region of the country is, you know, we're really one of the last ecoregions to have grizzly bears and wolverines prolific in our state. So it's, you know, the people of this region have done a good job conserving species that other regions of the country have long since extirpated.
So I noticed on the website that as National Field Director, well, I noticed that the organization has some involvement in trying to put a stop to trafficking of wildlife. Are you involved in that effort?
Yes, a little bit. So, as you know, in 2020, you know, we were hit by this COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic, and, you know, it turned out that this novel coronavirus that crisscrossed all over the world, you know, killing millions of people, turned out to be a zoonotic disease, which is a disease that where the pathogen is transmissible between animals and humans. And there's actually almost 25% of the deaths around the world are caused by infectious diseases generally, and more than half of those are considered zoonotic diseases. And so we started thinking about, well, really, you know, the root of this pandemic fundamentally is about the exploitation of wildlife and live wildlife trafficking. You know, that's how scientists and researchers now think the coronavirus pandemic started, with wildlife trafficking. So, you know, with some of our coalition partners, we started working on a bill in Congress called the Preventing Future Pandemics Act. and what that bill would do is, first of all, in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, it recognizes that there is an urgent need for a global approach to getting a handle on these emerging wildlife zoonotic diseases and the threats that they pose to the human population. And so what this bill would do, and it's been introduced in Congress, is it would outlaw the import, the export, and the sale of live wildlife for human consumption in the United States. It would also provide funding for law enforcement internationally, where there is a flourishing trade of at-risk species, and including trade in live wildlife for consumption.
Are you finding bipartisan support for that?
It is actually a bipartisan bill. It's sponsored by, there's a Democrat and a Republican in the House, and there's a Democrat and Republican in the Senate that have sponsored the bill so far. Hopefully, we were hoping it would be attached and be part of a final spending package this year, but that didn't happen. But
so,
we're optimistic. These zoonotic diseases, they're not going away. And the more, it really puts a, it puts a fine point on the importance of wildlife conservation, not just for the sake of wildlife, but also for human health.
Is there anything else that you're involved in regard to the trafficking of wildlife, capturing and selling?
I believe that's really...
That's your primary...
Our primary focus in that issue area is that preventing future pandemics.
Well, it's related to some species. There's already some prohibition of wildlife trafficking, isn't there?
Yeah, species that are endangered or threatened, there's already a prohibition in trafficking of listed species. I think the Preventing Future Pandemic Act would expand the prohibition of trafficking to any live animal for human consumption.
What department of the government is involved in preventing that trafficking?
I believe it's the State Department, actually.
And do you know how effective their efforts are?
It's not... The wildlife trafficking piece is only it's a tiny piece of what we're involved in. It's not an area that I have a lot of expertise in. I don't really... I don't really know. I do know that, the most important thing is the international cooperation to stop it, because it's not something that, the U.S. can stop just on its own. It is, obviously there are markets for wildlife trafficking, all over the world and in the United States. But, it's really we need international cooperation on that.
So, as Northern Rockies field rep for the Endangered Species Coalition, what responsibilities do you have? Is it reporting or lobbying? What do you do?
Not a lot of lobbying, a little bit, but I mostly, I engage in wildlife conservation issues that are important in Idaho and Montana, with the focus on species that are imperiled or, listed under the Endangered Species Act. Or species, in the case of wolves, recently recovered in this region and still recovering in other places around the U.S. It's a subset of wildlife species that we're involved in. And then, of course, one of our main missions at the Endangered Species Coalition is the support and the celebration of and the defense sometimes of the Endangered Species Act, which is our nation's safety net for plants, wildlife, and fish that are on the brink of extinction.
So is your principal involvement with agency reps or legislators or local people? Who do you primarily have your contact with?
Yeah, a lot of all of the above, really. We work with our volunteers and our members to help them engage, to educate them, and to help them learn about wildlife conservation issues here in the region and how to engage and advocate for wildlife.
And you're primarily involved in Idaho and Montana, not down into Utah and Wyoming?
No, and mostly it's because of, it's a big region.
So
primarily Montana and somewhat Idaho.
Mm-hmm. Are you engaged with the effort to remove the dams on the Snake River?
I am. We have a field representative in the Pacific Northwest who, you know, works primarily on that issue, and I, as field director, I oversee some of his work. That the issue, you know, with the Lower Snake dams has been picking up steam in recent years. The courts have ruled that the federal government has a responsibility to not let the Snake River Spring Chinook run of salmon disappear forever. It's a historic and unique migration of salmon. I believe it's one of the longest and highest elevation gain of any fish migration in the world. Those fish, you know, they enter the Columbia River system from the Pacific Ocean, and they end up high in the Sawtooth Mountains in central Idaho in a place called Redfish Lake. And, you know, unfortunately, the number of fish that actually reach all the way back, get back all the way back up into the Sawtooth to spawn, you know, has dwindled to a tiny fraction of the historic salmon populations that have made that journey. And that's largely because of four run-of-the-river dams on the Lower Snake River that impede fish passage in both directions. The salmon, you know, not only are they a key indicator species of ecosystem health, they're also culturally important to the indigenous peoples of the Pacific Northwest, including the Nez Perce tribe in Idaho, and they're a traditional food source of indigenous people as well. So the salmon, you know, they're a pretty important piece of the ecology of the Pacific Northwest, and it would be a shame to see the complete total extinction of the Spring Chinook when we know we can do something about it.
So how far along is that effort to remove those dams on the Snake River? They have pretty good legislative support, don't they?
They have some. You know, the issue's been going on for decades, really, since when we first learned that these four dams were impeding the migration of the salmon run. You know, unfortunately, there's some very powerful interests that want those dams. You know, everything from those, you know, the dams, they provide some transportation services on the waters behind the dams. They produce a little bit of electricity, you know, although the amount of electricity they produce could be offset relatively easily. Now, especially now that renewable energy systems, wind and solar, have really improved significantly and taken off in the Pacific Northwest. We've really got to figure out a way to get these dams out of here.
Well, the indigenous tribes are strongly in lobbying for the removal of those dams because they want the salmon to be replaced. So what are the important issues that you cover? Do you deal with endangered species of plants?
We do somewhat. We do, well, I mean, me personally, in Montana, we do have three threatened and endangered plants in the state of Montana, and they're actually all threatened under the Endangered Species Act. The water howellia is a water-dwelling lily-type plant that is endemic only to the Swan Valley in western Montana. And then there's a plant called the Lady's Tresses and another one called the Spalding's Catchfly. And there really isn't a lot of conservation issues around those plants that I'm aware of, so I don't work on those too much. More broadly, the Endangered Species Coalition has a large program intending to restore habitat for pollinators by creating pollinator habitat through native plant expansion. So that's called the Pollinator Protectors Program. And we fund and support communities and program partners to create more habitat for pollinators and monarch butterflies by contributing funds to native gardens and the planting and the actual expansion of native plant ecosystems that are specifically for pollinators.
Are there other fish species that you engage about apart from salmon?
Sure. You know, not recently, but I have been engaged on bull trout issues, particularly around the bull trout critical habitat designation a number of years ago. You know, that's one of the three fish in Montana that are protected under the Endangered Species Act, you know, and bull trout, probably the most well-known of them. The pallid sturgeon, which is a ancestral fish of the Missouri River system, is another one. And then the white sturgeon, which lives in the Kootenai River system in the far northwest corner of the state. Those are the three protected fish under the Endangered Species Act. And
what about frogs and salamanders?
To my knowledge, we don't have any Endangered Species Act listed amphibians in the state of Montana. Salamanders, amphibians, those species are obviously extremely important to riparian ecosystems and lakes and their and wetlands, and they're, you know, they tend to indicate ecosystem health.
I noticed that ESC is heavily involved in the monarch butterfly recovery.
Yes. Yeah, and that's part of our pollinator protectors program that I was talking about before. We've actually here in Montana, there's a number of places where I've partnered with other organizations to create monarch butterfly habitat, including over in Helena with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Wild Education Center. There, just west of town, a number of years ago, we planted a big garden of monarch butterfly plants, habitat plants, called Showy Milkweed. And I believe that garden is still there. And then there's here in the Missoula area, we partnered with a church a number of years ago to create a pollinator garden, as well as with the Montana Natural History Center and the city of Missoula.
Are there any birds you work on behalf of?
Here in Montana, we have three birds that are protected under the Endangered Species Act. We have the piping plover, which is in the northeast corner of the state, and then the least tern and the whooping crane. We haven't worked too much on those species in recent years, to my knowledge. We weren't super involved in some of the sage-grouse work at the time, mostly being short-staffed. The sage-grouse, as you know, is a bird that's widespread throughout the western United States and has also seen widespread habitat decline and population decline as well. And we supported the proposed listing of the sage-grouse under the Endangered Species Act. However, that was blocked by Congress from happening.
So what's your involvement with grizzly bear, Montana and Idaho?
Yeah, we've been grizzly bear. It's a threatened species in the lower 48 states. The grizzly bear has been, you know, starting to rebound quite remarkably due to a lot of hands-on conservation efforts by a lot of different partners, including, you know, the states of Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming, the National Park Service, the Fish and Wildlife Service. And we have been engaged in commenting on both the Yellowstone conservation strategy as well as the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem, which is the Glacier National Park and surrounding population of grizzly bears. So we'll wait and see. As you know, the state of Montana recently put out a draft statewide grizzly bear management and conservation plan for public comment, and we're in the process of reviewing that plan right now.
Can grizzly bears be shot in those two states?
They can be shot in self-defense.
Uh-huh.
That's about it.
But they can't be.
They are a protected species. You know, they're in Montana, they're our state animal, and they're also, you know, as you know, they're one of the slowest reproducing mammals on the planet. So they are very sensitive to threats to the population, and it takes the grizzly bear a long time to recover. One grizzly bear female at most has three cubs every 3 years.
Right. I understand that they're absent from the Bitterroot Range. Maybe a straggler or two is coming in. Are you optimistic about recovery in that area?
Well, it's really some great habitat. You know, we're definitely interested in seeing some habitat conservation in certain areas that would facilitate grizzly bears, you know, migrating to the Bitterroot and occupying some of those lands. You know, there may, if grizzly bears have gone into the Bitterroots, we're not sure how many, if any, are there right now. There may be. But I think in order to fully recover grizzly bears in the Selway Bitterroot ecosystem, there's probably going to need some degree of population augmentation there. But, you know, a big process was started about more than 20 years ago, 25 years ago, to try and do an augmentation of grizzly bears into the Selway Bitterroot. There was a big stakeholder process in the Bitterroot Valley, and they ended up, you know, the Fish and Wildlife Service finalized a proposal, and then Congress stepped in and blocked funding for it.
Uh-huh.
And it never happened.
So what other mammalian species do you work on recovery for?
Well, in the past, I have worked a little bit on issues around the other two mammal species in Montana that are protected under the Endangered Species Act, Canada lynx and black-footed ferret. The black-footed ferret, central and eastern Montana, is that native habitat for the black-footed ferret. That's one of the most endangered mammals in the U.S. Primarily the problem, you know, there is a captive breeding center where they're trying to breed ferrets for release into the wild, and they do those releases. The big problem is the plague right now, and the plague kills prairie dogs, which is the primary food source of the black-footed ferret.
Right.
And so, you know, staying ahead of the plague has been the problem.
What about Rocky Mountain sheep? I gather that there are isolated herds on high elevations, and they're disconnected from each other. Does that cause any threat to their survival long term?
Well, I don't know a lot about sheep, but I do know, I mean, for any species, you know, you really want, you know, the populations not to be completely isolated. You want different populations of species to be able to, you know, connect periodically and interbreed with each other. So I don't know a lot of the specifics around the particular herds that you're maybe thinking about. But, you know, certainly we want maximum habitat connectivity for all species.
Is there a healthy black bear population in the Northern Rockies?
We think there is.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I think Montana officially says there's approximately 20,000 black bears in the state.
There's an effort to to allow bison onto other ranges like the C.M. Russell Wildlife Area, Wildlife Refuge.
Yeah, that's a great idea. You know, we support all efforts to recover wild bison. Bison evolved with this landscape, and they graze the landscape really well and could have many positive impacts on restoring the short grass prairie.
Uh-huh.
We support the work of other organizations that are working to restore bison.
Uh-huh. What's the status of the Wildlife Carters Conservation Act in Congress?
So that bill was sponsored, I think the lead sponsor in the House was Representative Don Beyer, and that bill passed out of the House a couple of years ago, but I do not, you know, we haven't been able to get that bill through the Senate. But we definitely support that along with the Tribal Wildlife Corridors companion bill.
So it has to be reenacted in the House before?
I think it'll have to be reintroduced to Congress.
Uh-huh. Do you know why, what the resistance is in the Senate?
I don't really know.
Okay. What's the position of the Endangered Species Coalition regarding hunting and trapping?
Well, you know, many of our, you know, some of, we don't oppose hunting for food. In fact, we have members and supporters and staff who hunt, including me.
Uh-huh.
While we don't support wolf and bear hunting, we recognize that, you know, some level of that is going to occur. But what the state of Montana is doing right now with wolves is not just hunting, it's really persecution. I mean, we've seen legislation pass in 2021, you know, intending to bring, you know, to really bring down the population of wolves to the bare minimum to keep just enough to keep them from being listed under the Endangered Species Act again. And, you know, we've seen the addition of snares on the landscape, bounties. Now there's a private group out of Idaho that it's now legal for them to pay a bounty to wolf hunters and trappers.
Mm.
And we don't support any of those things. We've actively opposed them. We think, you know, any and all hunting should follow fair chase ethical standards and should be conservative. You know, in the case of wolves, I think we need to recognize, you know, the importance of wolves as part of Montana's unique wildlife heritage.
Well, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask you, I know there are a couple organizations that oppose trapping in Montana, and are you aligned with them or hands off or what?
Yeah, on some issues, we work with some organizations that work against trapping, particularly on the wolf issue.
Uh-huh.
You know, we want to rein in some of the excessive wolf. I don't see it being, you know, politically achievable to actually ban it, but we do want to rein in some of the excesses that we've seen since 2021 in the legislative session, particularly allowing snares. You know, snares could potentially not only do a lot of damage to, in terms of the number of wolves that are killed, but there's a lot of trapping and snaring has broad impacts on not only other species of wildlife, including threatened and endangered species, but frankly, like people's dogs, one of the number one species caught by accident in traps are people's pets.
Well, Derek, we've exhausted our time, but I appreciate your willingness to talk to us today. This has been great. Thank you very much for the information and for the work that you do. So thanks again.
Thanks very much, Jay.
Our guest today has been Derek Goldman, Northern Rockies Field Representative for the Endangered Species Coalition. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to jswild-wilderness.com and see additional features of our website. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Shell.